Welcome to season four of The Culture of Kindness. My name is Nahala Summers and I am your host. A culture of kindness is based on the idea that by bringing kindness into leadership, we reduce stress, anxiety, make happier workplaces, and in turn, improve the bottom line for any organization or institution. It is a book, leadership program, accreditation, and of course, this wonderful podcast. Kindness has been my life's work since I founded the social movement for kindness back in 2012 called Sunshine People. And it has kept me interested on what people have to say on the complexities of kindness ever since. The guest lineup is exceptional, from politicians to social media influencers, best-selling authors to BBC presenters, an eclectic mix of people who all have completely different views on kindness, how we get it, and where the world is currently at. If you enjoy this episode, then please do show your support for kindness by subscribing to the podcast, leave a five-star review, or simply invest in the book, aptly named A Culture of Kindness, available on Amazon. Thanks so much. I hope you enjoy. Gay Haskins, it is an absolute honour to have you on A Culture of Kindness podcast. I'm not sure that there is somebody more suited to come on the podcast than yourself, an inspiration for anybody looking for leadership styles, changes with a move to go into kindness. Your background gives you a great deal of credibility to stand up and say this is the way that we need to lead. And we're going to chat about some of that stuff. And particularly, I want to start on your early life within drama, because I think it's what you said about that was hugely important. But, you know, for anybody that isn't aware, you're co-author of Kindness and Leadership, have had a wide and varied and award-winning background within lecturing, researching and leadership in the corporate world. Before we go into all of those things, I really want to, as I said, start on this kind of role of teaching that you had within drama, and that you really talked about leadership being an art. And I'd love to just kind of elaborate a little bit more on that idea, because I just love it. I think that's so true.
Yes. I mean, when I first went to business school, which was probably before you were born, or possibly before you were born, we looked a lot at the science of business and the science of management. And of course, science is terribly important. But like everything else, it's two-sided. Life is about both and. It's not either or. It's both and. And through going to drama school, which I did when I left school, I got a wonderful appreciation of the importance of the arts in our lives. Studying drama made me really understand the importance of empathy, for instance. Mm-hmm. Because when you're doing improvisation classes, and I never became a great actress, and I mean, Helen Mirren was in our class, but she really stood out, you know, I didn't. But I love teaching. And one of the things we found through doing improvisation is standing in somebody else's shoes and seeing the world from their perspective. And I think that mostly since 1978, I've worked in the field of management development. And gradually over the years, the importance of the emotional side of management has been ever increasing in importance. And whereas things like key performance indicators, for instance, are arguably very important, for me, equally, and actually more important is how we actually behave in the workplace and what we do to try and create a positive culture. And of course, culture is at the root of your work and your book. And I've become increasingly aware of the emotional and the behavioral side, and the behavioral side, by the way, of kindness in organizations.
Do you think, I mean, I have so many questions, but you've said that so beautifully. I now have brand new questions that I now want to ask. Do you see that there's been a change, particularly since COVID came, within the management? Do you see that that's going to transform or change our workplaces to something different? Or do you think we will be stuck in the way that we've always led?
I don't know. We witnessed generally within the community, and I'm no longer working full time. You witness in the community, I think, a greater awareness of kindness, particularly towards the NHS. Mm. We all have been really so appreciative of what frontline workers have done. And we've realized that frontline workers are not the most highly paid people in society. They are often paid low salaries. Take care home workers who do wonderful, wonderful jobs. I think if I think of the meetings that we've had at Side Business School over the last year with the staff meetings, there has been a huge increase of sort of understanding between one another. I think there's been an awareness of both the strengths and weaknesses of working at home. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in 2 or 3 weeks' time, and whether people do go back to work, or whether they choose to adopt, or their organizations allow them to adopt a mixed model. Like, I think if I were working full time now in an organization, I would probably want to go in for 3 days, but see the value of spending 2 days working from home. Mm. So I do think there have been huge acts of kindness by organizations to the community. Within organizations, I hope they continue. I really do. And in terms of kindness and the recognition that you and I and people like Pinky Lalani, I mean, Pinky wrote in the preface to your book that kindness is at the heart of leadership. I hope we can continue to emphasize kindness. I mean, because it has been emphasized a great deal on television. You hear the word kindness much more than I think ever before. Mm-hmm. And I just hope that it does indeed continue, and that our behavior doesn't sort of revert to less care and less concern about other people and other countries. I am very pleased to hear that at least today in our country, UK, that Boris Johnson is thinking of a real debate about the foreign aid issue.
Yeah.
World. And I think that is one of the things that the whole pandemic has brought about. Actually, as well as kindness, the whole need for greater fairness around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. You've done a lot of traveling with your work. You've set up business schools, and I'll kind of touch on that. You also had this, you were the first woman to appoint Director General of the Europe Foundation for Management Development, for one. Bit of a mouthful, but I think it's important to put it out there. And you were there, you took that position for 5 years. Was there any key takeaways that you took away from your time in that position that you feel that maybe supported the work that you did then with kindness and leadership, or that really you just took away as being really important?
Oh, I suppose above all, working with EFMD was the best part of my life, working life, because it was so international. And it made you really appreciate other cultures. Mm-hmm. And value other cultures, and also realize your weakness in how you dealt with other cultures. For instance, I remember we organized a huge conference in Spain, and after each sort of planning meeting we'd had, I would write out the notes on all the actions we were supposed to take. And after a while, I realized that that didn't work with the Spanish culture, because it wasn't a note-taking culture. If I'd been working with Austria or Germany or Sweden, it would have been entirely appropriate. But the Spanish culture is a more talking culture: work behind the scenes, agree behind the scenes, and so. I think I learned so much. I learned also that I remember being told for conferences, oh, if they were international, don't get too many native UK speakers. They all speak too much in acronyms. They speak too fast. We who are not, don't have English as our first language, we can't understand it, what they're saying. And so that was a big revelation to me. And it was just so wonderful to work in an office where people could jump from speaking English to French to German. And even we had which was unusual for that time, we had a Mandarin speaker. And it was just wonderful. And I have moved out of London now, but the thing I most loved about London was how cross-cultural it was, and how you walk down the street and you'll see great diversity of color, great diversity of language, and it's wonderful.
Yeah. You also set up, whilst you were there, the China European International Business School. Was there something, you know, what were the challenges that came up with that? But was there some differences in the business, and obviously namely the leadership styles between the countries? And, you know, was there some big differences? And I guess, why did you set it up with that country in particular?
Okay, we set up the China Europe International Business View School. It was because it was the inspiration of a wonderful man, Max Boiseau. And Max came to the office one day and said, "You should set up a business school in China." And Sebrin, who was the director general then, he's no longer with us. Max was very persuasive. And so Sebrin took it forward. We all took it forward. We thought it was a wonderful idea. And fortunately, Max had some strong links with the European Union. So the European Union came forward with partial funding. And we joined initially with an entity in Beijing. And Max went out to Beijing and set up the school in the most appalling conditions. I mean, I remember going out there and the radiators were running with water and it was cold. But determination of an individual, which is so often how things happen, the determination of an individual and his ability to respect Chinese ways of thinking, and then the other people who came on board to run the school were all inspirational people. I only had a very minor role in setting it up because we were the agency that coordinated it on behalf of the European Union. And it was really other people that did a wonderful job, and professors from across Europe went out. And over time, the school is now in Shanghai and is a joint venture with Jiao Tong University. And I think what's kept it going is respect for others and respect for other ways of thinking. And for instance, the Chinese professors who teach at the school still tend to teach in their way, which is a lecturing way. They lecture, and you know, and then the Western professors that come over tend to teach in a more participative way. And it's not saying that one is better than the other. It's the way it is, and both have equally strong pluses and minuses.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've clearly worked across the world. You've seen so much. Is there a country that you have seen working in their leadership styles or their work that you thought, actually, this is as close to a great model than we can imagine, or that we've learned something, that you learned something from, that you really kind of took forwards?
Well, I suppose my favorite country in the world is Canada. And I lived in Canada for 10, 12 years. And I still go back there whenever I can. And I'm a Canadian as well as a British citizen. And what I like about Canada is that it isn't a country that aspires to be number one in the world. It's not America. It's not make America great again. It's make Canada a good, kind, tolerant, fair country to live in, where there is inequality, but there is more equality than many other places, where there's still a long way to go, for instance, with the issue of Indigenous rights in Canada. But progress has been made. It's a country where, by and large, I remember when I have gone to Nova Scotia for many summers, and you know, you could leave the door of your cabin open. It was safe. Well, maybe not from bears, but it was safe. So I think I learned a lot in Canada, and I don't know if you've read the wonderful book called Values by Mark Carney, who used to be governor of the Bank of England. Well, Mark Carney is a Canadian, and he, in the financial crisis, Canada was one of the countries that came through better than most. Mm. So Canada is a country to be widely admired for its values, and it's not to say it's not perfect, but it's a country that I greatly admire.
Wonderful. Remember that. Values by Mark Carney. I'll definitely be getting that. While we're talking about books, you know, we've barely even touched on Kindness and Leadership that you co-authored with. And how did that book kind of evolve? Because I imagine that there was this journey that came to the book and how you decided actually we realized that we need to start spreading this word and we need to start talking about it more.
Okay. I suppose it was for many reasons. First of all, I think I've tried in my life, not always successfully, to when I was leading a business like The Economist or growing the executive education at London Business School. I tried to be kind as in myself. Mm. And even though in universities there can be a fair amount of unkindness, actually. Mm. And that's one of the wonderful things in your book, by the way, that we didn't do. You talk about unkindness. And that was a eureka moment for me. I thought, why didn't we write more about unkindness in our book? But I think the other thing was that more and more I got to realize that kindness was never mentioned in our leadership programs. And I've met with leading business schools around the world. And I've worked arguably at two of the top business schools in the world. And yet, in executive programs for companies, you never had sessions on kind leadership. Maybe it was too sissy, I don't know. But so one day I was sitting down with Mike Thomas, who became one of the co-authors. And Mike said, oh, I've done some research on the topic of grace in leadership. And by the way, we researched how many times the topic of kindness was mentioned in academic literature. And it's so small. And that's what made us decide in around, it must have been 2015, maybe, or 2014, to write the book. Unfortunately, Routledge were very kind and thought it was an interesting opportunity. And since, it's probably the same for you, since I started writing about it, I found that there was ever increasing interest in it and ever increasing awareness of its importance in organizations, although it's still not widely taken up. I think in academic institutions, there's a tendency to talk more about compassion. Mm. I prefer kindness because I believe that kindness is a word that can be recognized at any level in society. Mm-hmm. If I go out to the man tending the garden, I say, oh, you're really being very kind in doing this work for us. If I said you're being very compassionate, I'm not sure, you know. Yeah. Compassionate requires a certain degree of understanding to get into the word, but kindness. And I suppose the other thing was that when I went to work at Oxford in 2006, I went to work at this business, part of the business school called Egrove Park. Now, Egrove Park is just outside Oxford in Kennington, And it's where Side Business School runs its executive programs, or did run all its executive programs at that time. Yeah. And I had this very posh campus by the railway station, and I worked from the rural campus. And the people that worked there, from the reception to the catering staff to the hospitality team, were all so kind to each other. And there was a real ethos of listening. If I were to go back to Egrove tomorrow and Sally Underwood, who headed the catering serving team, she would come up to me, we'd have a nice talk, we'd listen to each other for 10 minutes and chat and find out how things were. And it had this real ethos of listening, celebrating kindness. We all ate together, regardless of where we worked in the organization. It really had a lovely feel, even though it wasn't. The building was built in 1970s by a Danish architect, so it had loads of glass and lovely views. But from the outside, it wasn't classically beautiful. So working at Egrove Park was a big spur to both recognizing kindness in organizations and wanting to keep that kindness going.
And there's this power as well, like you say, and I think you talk about this within the book, but kindness begets kindness, and this whole idea that, you know, that catering manager started to have a conversation and she gives you 10 minutes and then it feeds out. So yes. You then go and give 10 minutes. And then you start to build this culture where people start to listen more, for example, and it rolls out.
Yes. And perhaps because it wasn't, I think there were about 73 people in the total team there at the time I first went there. It did mean we all knew each other. And I do recognize that it is difficult for large organizations to create consistent cultures of kindness. Mm. Because even if a large organization breaks up, as most do, into smaller units, it can be that one unit in an organization will be kinder than another. But when we interviewed for this, this was linked to Pinky Lilani's work and her Kind Leader Awards every year in November. We did interview 10 of the leaders across the UK who had been awarded Kind Leadership Awards. And we came up with 10 ways of being kind that they all believed in. And things like listening, communicating with a personal touch. So I talked to Nahalia rather than just talking generally, celebrating honesty. I think honesty is a terribly important element of kindness. Kindness isn't about being sweet all the time.
Yeah.
It's being honest and fair to people. So if somebody has maybe done something that didn't help the organization, you don't pat them on the back, but you help them to seek to understand that their action may not have been helpful, either through a process of appreciative inquiry or through a process of honesty and just saying, look, not sure why you did this.
Yeah.
And being honest is terribly important.
Yeah. And I think it's actually unkind when we aren't honest to somebody. really, it's terribly unkind. And I seek out, I've been talking to somebody this week about that, about my people, the people in my life who will give me feedback, even when it's a little uncomfortable, but it will help me grow. And I have that with them, that relationship where I think when they speak to me about something, I go, yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I need to, because we've built that trust, and they, I know that their honesty comes from a place of love and care. It's hugely important, right?
I think my biggest personal weakness is on the honesty front, because my parents were pacifists, and so I grew up hating conflict, and I sort of shy away from strong arguments, or I'll start thinking, oh gosh, have I said too much? Have I expressed my views too strongly? And talking frankly and honestly to people is the biggest hurdle for me.
Yeah.
And it's even with my friends.
Yeah. I think for so many, though, you know, I speak to leaders, people within organizations that say that actually just want a helping hand on how do I say it and where do I start? And it's very easy for me to coach that and consult with that and do that work with somebody. But actually, when I'm stood in the room and I have to do it myself, it is still always tough. It's like going to the gym, isn't it? It's the muscle that we have to keep working on to enhance that skill and get better at it, right?
Yeah. So I think that's probably true of a lot of people. I was going to say true for a lot of women, but I don't know. Some women adopt tough leadership styles. I don't know if you've read this book, Nahal. This was one, Leading with Kindness, Baker and O'Malley. And this is one of the earliest books written on kindness in leadership.
No, I haven't. I haven't even seen it, but I will certainly be looking it up. I've now got a list of books for myself.
Yeah, and it talks about kindness is not the same as likability. Kindness is not the same as being nice. It's and it talks about it's best to think of kindness as a key ingredient in a robust stew, you know, like a stew for dinner. And I think that's so true, that you need to put in your menu for good leadership, you need to drop the kindness ingredient into it.
Yeah.
When Lalit, who's the other editor of the book, and Lalit, wonderfully kind man, when he's listening skills with students was just fantastic. Lalit always puts the kindness ingredient in, and I think it makes it made such a difference to how he led programs. And I think when we did a session on kindness with the alumni of the advanced management program, so these were people from around the world who were in senior positions in organizations. And the most difficult thing they found was against kindness was a feeling that kindness was kind of sissy.
Yeah.
And was a feminine quality. Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about, oh, my auntie is very kind. And that put kindness in that box of being sweet and gentle. And that's what it is. And it's not.
I refer to it as fluffy. People believe it as being fluffy. And it's really not. Actually, it's really very hard. You know, I talk about this. This is my work. But I have to say, I find it incredibly tough. Every day I think to myself, it's a thought process. It's, you know, is this the right thing to do? You know, responding to somebody when you're dealing with a challenging situation. It takes thought. You know, and you don't suddenly have it all okay, you know, or all perfect by any stretch of the imagination, in my opinion.
Yeah, in our book, Ali Gill, who used to be an Olympic rower, she interviewed a lot of coaches, sports coaches, and she found with them that kindness was a very strong ingredient of coaching, but it had to be underpinned by fairness, and it had to be underpinned by discipline. Because if you're rowing in a team and you're not disciplined, you know. And that's why on the cover of our book, we have all these other words like compassion, engagement, care, fairness, and they're all things that are linked
to it. We've totally run out of time, and this is be a longer podcast than normal, but I've just got two more questions for you, Gay, and I could probably talk all day with you, and if you've got anything else to add, then please do, because we'll definitely have time for that.
If you do a 500 mile walk again, with you, because I think that even though I'm now 76, I can still do 500 miles. So that's
Gay. You'll be asked to come along to something I'm doing for sure. That would be such an honour. I'd have learned so much. I know that for sure. If there was something, a particular piece of advice, and you've given the listeners and myself so much to take away today, but if you were to give a particular piece of advice to take away to be a better leader or bring kindness into their workplace, what would you suggest people do?
I think I would suggest that you try to make kindness a philosophy of your life and to make it guide you perhaps on a daily basis. And if you do that, it's probably something you find that you're not consistently good at. But I think it will help your life. It's a really, I mean, this golden rule of do unto others what you would have them do under your to you is really important, and I think it really, really matters. And I think that an act of kindness can change lives for the better, and I think being a kind leader and always remembering kindness, even if you're in an extremely competitive business, is very important. I for our book I interviewed this wonderful head of a PR firm in Chicago, Kathleen, and Kathleen. Her agency has kindness as its core value and as a mantra. And she said that I've always put kindness before profitability. And I found that with the acts of kindness, kindness comes first and profitability will follow.
Yeah.
And I think there is an increasing amount of research to show that kindness leads to engagement, to commitment, to trust in organizations, which leads in turn to greater profitability.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when organizations start to understand that, then they think, oh, we'll adopt that great idea about kindness. That sounds like a winning idea. Final question, which I always ask at the end of every podcast: what does a culture of kindness mean to you, and what does that feel like?
I think a culture of kindness is a lot about the way we do things around here. Mm. When you go into an organization that is kind, you can sense the kindness. There'll be respect for each other. There'll be help for each other. There'll be a lot of humor. I think, you know, kindness involves laughing a lot and smiling a lot and celebrating the good things that are happening in an organization. And I would encourage people who want to create a culture of kindness to have kindness as one of their core values.
Yes, absolutely. Gate, thank you so much for your time. It's been an incredible honor. I've been waiting a very long time for this day to talk with you on the podcast. You've given us so much to take away, and I feel that we could have probably gone on 2 hours with your history, with your work, with so much that you have to share. But hopefully the listeners will have got enough from you for today to take forwards into their own lives. Thank you so much, Gay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening. If you have loved this episode, please do share it with others. Pop on and give a lovely review, but mostly take forwards into your life something that can change someone else's. We are looking for the elusive happiness, and kindness is the action that can get us there.